My talk today is going to be about our new approach to evaluating network systems, which is embodied in a system we've designed and built called FlexLab. This is done with a bunch of my colleagues at the University of Utah. I'd like to specifically mention Jonathan Durig, my fellow student who co-led this project. So what's wrong with the way that we evaluate network systems right now? Well, there are generally two types of experimental test beds that our community uses to evaluate their systems. And both of them have some serious shortcomings. So in an emulator, such as ModelNet or Emulab, you have a real application that runs on hosts in the emulator, and its traffic is sent through a path emulator that shapes the traffic, such as its bandwidth or its delay, according to a specification from the user. And the hosts in an emulator are typically devoted to a particular experiment at a time. So the good points are that we get a lot of control over the hosts because network conditions are under the experimenter control. We can have repeatable network conditions. And we can also have a very wide variety of network conditions. The problem, though, is that those network conditions are simply the ones specified by an experimenter, and they're artificial, and they likely don't exhibit some characteristics of real paths, and we don't. It's hard to even tell in what ways they're accurate or not, or true to life or not true to life, or how that matters to a particular application. So, in contrast, overlay test beds such as the RON test bed in PlanetLab have hosts that are scattered throughout the internet and shared by multiple users at once. So the good thing about this is that you get real internet network conditions, and you also get a platform on which you can deploy services that have proximity to real end users. But the current test beds are overloaded. There's too much use on them. Because they're shared, there are a few privileged operations that an experimenter can do. An experimenter can't replace a kernel, can't change TCP stack options, those kinds of things. Because the internet is, of course, not under control of the test bed, you can't really have repeatable network conditions. And finally, it's very difficult to develop and debug on a physically distributed system compared to, say, a cluster or emulator. So we think that we can pull these things together and end up with a testbed that combines some of the strengths of an emulator and an overlay testbed. And our system for this is called FlexLab. So you can think of what we're trying to do as taking the internet and projecting it into an emulator. Now, if we could make a perfect model of the internet, this would be easy. We would just instantiate that model in the emulator and we'd be done. But of course, that's a really big open problem and, you know, not one that's going to be solved anytime soon. So the approach we take instead is this. We start out by measuring some network, construct a model from it, from those measurements, and then instantiate that model in an emulator. But FlexLab doesn't stop here, though, because the behavior of the application in the emulator can be used as input back up to the measurement and modeling stages. So you can, for example, use information about the paths that an application is exercising to measure those paths more carefully or to try different models on them and so forth. And FlexLab has been specifically designed to allow plugging in of different measurement and modeling frameworks. So I'm going to present one model that we've developed. We present two more in the paper, and our hope is that we can use other work done in the measurement and modeling community and sort of just plug in network models sort of more directly into the emulator. Key points of my talk are that FlexLab is a software framework for pluggable network models. In FlexLab, the application behavior can be used to drive measurements and models in real time. And I'm going to present application-centric internet modeling, which is a high-fidelity modeling technique that we've developed specifically for FlexLab that includes some new techniques like in available bandwidth measurement and so forth. There are more things in the paper, more contributions in the paper that I'm not going to talk about today. I'm not going to talk about the flexible network measurement system we have for site-to-site measurement of planet lab paths. We have some network stationarity results showing the time scales over which paths change in planet lab. We have two straightforward network models that come from our measurement. We have some analysis of shared bottlenecks and the effects that those have on the emulation. And we also have some measurements showing the kinds of scheduling delay that we typically see on planet lab. So let's go through the FlexLab architecture. So it starts with an application running on an emulator host inside of an emulator. And for the rest of this talk, the emulator we're going to use is Emulab, and the overlay testbed that we're going to use is PlanetLab. So the application runs on a dedicated emulator host. There is a monitor that runs on that host along with the application. And this monitor is implemented as a shared library that can be dynamically loaded in to an application, so it doesn't require modification in order to instrument. And it tracks the network conditions, or sorry, the network accesses made by the application, such as the host that it connects to, the amount of data it sends, the timing of that data, and so forth. And it puts this into an offered load model, which can then be input to the network model that you're using for a particular emulation. That network model can also take input from a measurement repository. Using our PlanetLab measurement system, we've put about 500 million measurements of delay, connectivity, and bandwidth into the data repository in the past year. And these are available to both the network models and to, you know, people interested in them for their research. And the network model finishes by calculating some network characteristics that are fed into the path emulator. And I'm going to show you the inside of the path emulator later on. I'll now move on to talk about our application-centric internet modeling. So imagine for a moment that we could get the benefits of having emulator hosts, full control over them, orthogonal control network, these kinds of things. Imagine that we could get the benefits of those hosts with real internet conditions by taking packets as they come out of the application and teleporting them up into a PlanetLab host, where they're sent across the internet, and when they reach the destination PlanetLab host, they're teleported back down to the receiving part of the application. Well, clearly we can't do this for, you know, simple reasons like speed of light, but we can actually get surprisingly close. And this is the architecture of ACIM that lets us get that close. The bottom portion of this figure is the same architecture figure I've been showing you so far. So the interesting part, the new part, is on the top. So the application, instrumented by the application monitor, runs inside of Emulab. The offered load model, which doesn't contain contents of packets, it only contains write sizes and timings, is sent to a measurement agent that runs in a PlanetLab sliver. And this measurement agent then replicates that same offered load on the internet, and it inspects the packet stream that results and uses that to infer things such as the current RTT on a path and the available bandwidth on a path. And it then feeds those into the path emulator, which has been shaping application traffic sent by the application this whole time. And this essentially happens in real time. So we have a feedback loop between the application causing an offered load to be sent to the agent, which in turn makes some measurements, affects the path emulator, which in turn affects the application. And this happens in basically real time. There's obviously some delay transmitting between PlanetLab and Emulab, but that, you know, that will typically be like on the, you know, skew things on the, like the tens or hundreds of milliseconds. There's some ACIM design challenges that I'll discuss. The ones that I will discuss are determining when to drop packets and finding the relationship between throughput and available bandwidth. There's some that I'm not going to talk about that are in the paper. All of the work I'm going to talk about today is for TCP. We've also extended these algorithms for UDP, and we have details in the paper. And I'm not going to talk about how we detect and compensate for certain kinds of CPU starvation artifacts on PlanetLab. So this is what the inside of the Path Emulator Buck look like. Now, we use a much improved version of the popular DummyNet traffic shaper. And there are basically three things that it emulates. It emulates queuing delay, it emulates an available bandwidth, and then it emulates a constant delay that is not due to queuing. So for this all other delay box, we calculate a base RTT similar to the way that TCP Vegas does it. And that's simply defined as the shortest RTT we've seen recently. So the assumption is that the shortest RTT we've seen has encountered a minimal amount of queuing delay, and therefore most of the delay that packet saw was due to things like transmission and propagation out through the internet. To decide when to drop packets, we assume that most packet loss is due to congestion, which is a reasonable assumption in the wired internet. And so therefore, the packets are going to tend to be dropped at the queue on the bottleneck router. So we emulate this with some detail by having a limited length on that queue and dropping packets that would overflow the queue. Now, it's difficult to measure the length of the queue directly in terms of bytes or packets, so instead we simply measure it in terms of time. So when we see a packet loss, we find the RTT for the most recent successful packet, and we assume that that anything longer than that packet, or anything a packet that had longer queuing delay than that packet would probably get dropped, and so we set the length of the queue to the maximum recent RTT minus the base RTT. Anything arriving at the queue that would spend more than that amount of time in it gets dropped. I'll now move on to talking about available bandwidth. We have kind of an interesting situation in trying to measure available bandwidth. We're using the offered load of the application, right? We're replicating that on the internet. And so that offered load is not always sufficient to actually exercise the bandwidth available on the link. So we need to be able to detect this situation. So let's say that we start out with an offered load that is higher than the available bandwidth. The throughput that we measure will be right at or below the available bandwidth. And we expect to see that RTTs will be fairly high as the bottleneck queue remains full. If the offered load drops, but the available bandwidth stays constant, we'll see the measured throughput follow the offered load, and we expect to see the RTT drop as the bottleneck queue empties. And finally, if our available bandwidth then drops below the offered load, the throughput will again start following the available bandwidth curve, and we expect to see the RTT go back up as the queue fills up. So in this simplified graph, there are only two places circled where our measurement of throughput is a good estimation of available bandwidth. So we don't want to decrease the available bandwidth in the emulator in this middle region. And this is simply because if the application starts offering more load, we want the actual available bandwidth to be available to it right away. So how do we figure out when we're in one of these two situations? Well, if the throughput measurement we've just taken is greater than the last available bandwidth measurement we've taken, then the available bandwidth must have gone up, and we use that as our available bandwidth number. Otherwise, we look for some indicators that the throughput has reached the available bandwidth. And the two indicators that we use are that the TCP socket buffer is filling up because it is being filled more quickly than it's being drained, and that the recent RTTs have been increasing as we watch the bottleneck queue fill up. And we use a least squares fit linear regression to detect that. And both of these are fairly noisy metrics, and that's the reason why we use them together to indicate that the available bandwidth is being used. The most important features of ACIM are that it's precise and that it measures only the relevant parts of the network. So it scales with the number of paths used by the application and not the number of paths between all pairs of hosts or the size of the testbed. It's complete in that it automatically captures all the relevant network behavior. So there are certainly many strange things that can happen out in the core of the internet, and you know it's a difficult problem to try to measure them and determine the cause, emulate that cause. So we simply measure end-to-end effects, and because you know in some sense those are the only ones that matter to the application that is being tested. This allows us to detect rare and transient effects that we weren't even necessarily looking for. And it evokes reactive behavior from the network so that, you will see other TCP streams back off and so forth. And this feedback loop that we set up operates at near real time. Essentially, there is some delay, transmission delay between PlanetLab and EmuLab, but we're taking measurements for every single packet sent on the internet. So let's move on to some evaluation. We'll ask a couple questions here and try to answer them. So the first two questions are, is ACIM's path emulation accurate? And is it accurate at very small time scales? So we use a micro benchmark to examine this. And we use iPerf, which is a simple TCP bulk transfer type application. So iPerf, it runs inside of EmuLab. And the measurement agent, as part of FlexLab, runs out on PlanetLab slices. And the two particular PlanetLab nodes we're using are at UT Austin and AT&T Research. And to induce some network dynamics that would show in these graphs, we intentionally added some transient TCP cross-traffic for part of the experiment. So here we have graphs with time across the bottom, experiment time across the bottom, and we have throughput on the y-axis. And the two graphs are, the top graph is the network conditions seen by the measurement agent running on PlanetLab, and the bottom graph is the one seen by iPerf running inside of FlexLab with ACIM. And we can see here that, in fact, we do track the conditions seen out on the internet very well and very quickly inside of FlexLab. The period where we induced cross traffic from approximately 40 seconds to approximately 95 seconds, the FlexLab traffic actually reacts to traffic that it's not directly seeing that is out on the internet. Now you'll notice that there are some anomalies here, such as the one at time 100, where there is a big downward spike in the throughput seen on the measurement agent, and there's no such spike inside of FlexLab. So we examined this particular spike, and this one is a result of CPU starvation of the measurement agent on PlanetLab. So it didn't get scheduled for something around half of a second. And during that time, its socket buffer drained, and we had a sort of an artificially induced drop in offered load. So ACIM correctly detected that this was not due to a change in actual available bandwidth and didn't replicate this host artifact inside the emulation. So now that we've got a micro benchmark, is it still accurate, up to a really big, interesting, complicated application? And a related question is, does PlanetLab give accurate results for this application either? And can we really discover what the ground truth is? FlexLab might introduce some inaccuracies due to its measurement or emulation, and the application running on PlanetLab might see some inaccuracies due to the overloaded host conditions. So can we figure out what we really should be seeing? So we use BitTorrent for this, like everyone else here. We ran two simultaneous instances of the reference BitTorrent client. These ran on the same nodes at the same time so that they would get the same network conditions. It's a relatively small BitTorrent experiment. We used 8 nodes in the United States and Europe, and we had 1 seed and 7 clients. And we removed some sources of randomness in BitTorrent, but there are still some very complicated sources that are not removed, so we can't expect the graphs to line up exactly. So we're looking more at general trends. So in order to try to get at this issue of ground truth and trying to eliminate any artifacts that might be introduced, The first experiment we did uses a CPU reservation on Planet Lab. So one slice at a time is allowed to get a reservation of 25% of the CPU on the nodes that it's running on, as opposed to the best effort service that it normally gets. So we ran BitTorrent in this environment. We have, again, time across the x-axis and throughput on the y-axis. We see that the throughput seen on Planet Lab is similar to the throughput seen in Flex Lab. So each of these colored lines is representing one the download rate over time of one of the seven clients. And the average download rate across all clients on Planet Lab is 5.2 megabits, and on Flex Lab it's 5.4. So the average that we get is within 4%, and these results were very similar. I should mention that the instance of BitTorrent running on Planet Lab had a CPU reservation. The instance of the measurement agent as part of Flex Lab did not have the was running with best effort service on Planet Lab and did not have a reservation. Well, so what if we take away that reservation, that CPU reservation? We see that the throughput that BitTorrent is able to achieve on Planet Lab drops by a factor of 2.5, and that its behavior actually looks quite different. It's no longer spread out in several strata. The download rates are all very clustered. So, and Flex Lab performs similarly to the way that it did in our previous experiment. So the bottom line here is that it seems to be that Flex Lab and Planet Lab with CPU reservations are giving reasonable ground truth, but that Planet Lab without CPU reservations for this particular experiment is not giving accurate results because the lack of CPU availability on Planet Lab turns out to hit this BitTorrent client very very hard. And ACIM is able to still get good throughput because it's much lighter weight than BitTorrent. This BitTorrent client on an unloaded node used about 36 to 76% of the CPU, whereas our measurement agent used only 2.6%, so a factor of 15 to 30 smaller. And it also uses a factor of 4 less memory. So this sort of leads to a possible vision of the future, in which maybe it's not necessary to get full resource isolation, total control over hosts, things like orthogonal control network, into Planet Lab, but just use them in the emulators where they already exist, and essentially use Planet Lab nodes as network interfaces to provide vantage points for experiment measuring. And this also has the side effect that the applications that need to run directly on Planet Lab, because they're deployed services and need proximity to users, it have more resources available left over to them. So to conclude, Flex Lab gives us a new approach for evaluating network systems. It separates out the network model, and in doing so is designed to be able to take advantage of all of the measurement and modeling work that is going on in the community. It couples an emulator to an overlay testbed, and our ACIM emulation technique provides very good fidelity. And if you're interested in using it, send us mail at testbedops@emulab.net. And with that, I'll take your questions.
Hi, Dave Marwood from Google. This is really good work. I think this has a lot of potential. You mentioned early in your talk that people who make their own emulators will often test not all the possible parameters of a network. They'll test maybe throughput, latency, but maybe they forget something else. I think that's very true.
Or they set perhaps like a static throughput and latency, right? Where you really would see variation over time in the real internet.
And you validate your ACIM platform, and you measured throughput and presumably latency, not in the talk, but probably in the paper. People will validate their applications using ASIM. Are they then limited to the validation that you've done? If there's some other network effect that you haven't measured ASIM against?
So yes. I mean, the we will capture a bunch of effects that, so in an emulator, you might not, for example, model route flaps or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And with ASIM, you won't really know that the route flap is what's going on, right? But you will see the effect of that on latency and bandwidth and packet loss. Now, if, say, there is something out in the network that is filtering based on the content of your packets,
maybe the second-order derivative of latency is important to your application. Mm. And whether or not it's reflected in ASIM, I'm not sure that you would know that.
Yeah, I would say that's correct. And so one of the things that we're going to work on as future work is sort of some runtime validation and regression tests of ASIM to sort of get as much confidence in it as we can, so that every time it gets run, we do some validation tests on it.
Excellent. Thank you.
Hi, Mark Cherini, Tufts University. Thanks for that talk. I wonder if you could go back a few slides to the ASIM Planet Lab comparison graphs.
The
controlled one. That one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any? Actually, I'm on both of them. Do you have any sort of explanation, or could you theorize about the spikes for four or five of those at the beginning?
Yeah. So we're pretty sure that these are due to BitTorrent managing to ramp up its download rate before we have good measurements of the network. So we start with initial conditions that are just taken from iperf runs done like every few hours, but those will be somewhat stale. And what we observed is that when we ran BitTorrent in FlexLab on slower machines, those spikes didn't happen. And so those spikes seem to only occur when sufficient CPU is available on the node. So it's quite possible that if they had more CPU available on Planet Lab, you would also see those spikes on Planet Lab. But I can't give a definitive explanation.
You get the same without CPU reservation, you get roughly the same graph on FlexLab, right? Is that right?
So FlexLab does not have a CPU reservation in either graph.
Oh, right. Well, okay. Right. So the fair sharing Planet Lab is way reduced. You don't get even any near spike. So
right.
I understand that's a FlexLab artifact, probably, that according to your bandwidth saturation. CPU saturation, sorry. Thanks.
So in all your experiments, as I understand it, you were doing the measurements in Planet Lab online as the application was running.
Yes, that's
in
correct.
FlexLab, right? Is that the only intended use case, or are you also thinking about offline?
Yeah. So the two models we developed for the paper that I didn't talk about are basically derived from like background measurements that aren't necessarily taken at the same time that the application is running. So the intention is that FlexLab itself can be used both in sort of online and offline circumstances. ACIM, what we would like to be able to do is, of course, we have a record of all the network conditions we got for a particular run. And as future work, one of the things we're looking at is applying those network conditions to a future run of the application where we don't have the measurement running in tandem and getting a sense for how good of measurements we have for the paths that the application is actually using in that second run, and so forth, to get some network repeatability.
Let's thank the speaker.